Okay, this is the executive officer panel. We've been doing this for more years than I care to think about. Bob McGonigal asked me before whether I was in a good mood or a bad mood. I'll let you choose, decide which one. First thing I'm going to do is walk through the panelists and have them do a brief introduction of themselves. We're going to keep this non-commercial, and the purpose of this panel is to discuss what I would call strategic issues relating to the LIS industry. You have some very, very prominent and extremely bright executives here, and I have some questions that I've prepared and circulated to them, but I would much prefer that the questions come from you. Failing that, I can revert to my questions. I want to also point out that we have a wonderful assortment of executives, starting with Rob Bush, Mike Snow. We have Orchard, Mises. We have a European representative, Francois Falco, who runs the largest LIS in Europe with the most sites, and, of course, Gilbert Hakim, who is the CEO and founder of a major software firm in this country, SCC Soft. So we have wonderful representation of different companies. So I'm going to walk through and have them briefly introduce themselves, and then I will call for questions from the audience. Hopefully the discussions thus far have created questions in your mind, the future of the LIS industry, integration of LISs with EMRs. There are myriad issues out there, which I'm sure you're all grappling with. So we'll run through the introduction, starting with Rob. Then I'll open the floor for questions. If you proceed to the lavalier, to the wireless mics in the aisle, please introduce yourself and then ask your question. We'll keep the responses relatively brief, but we have 45 minutes to address all the strategic issues that may be concerning you or of interest. So that's the drill. We'll start with Rob.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm standing up because some of you wouldn't be able to see otherwise. I'm Rob Bush, president of Orchard Software. Since we're talking about strategic issues, it might help if I told you something strategically about where our company plays in the marketplace. We are only an LIS vendor. We don't also do management systems. So we're focused just primarily on LIS. Our product primarily sells into clinics and small, medium-sized hospitals, small, medium-sized reference labs. And we've been in the business now for 14 years.
My name is Mike Snow with Mises. Probably a lot of you know Mises and our lab system. I've been with the company about 3.5 years. I manage all of our software development, so I'm very technical in background, and really got in the lab business about 3.5 years ago, and it's a fascinating area. I'm still learning a lot, and I appreciate the opportunity to see you guys today.
You can stay seated. I'm sure that they'll...
Okay. Okay. So my name is François Falco. I'm the president of Technidata, which is a French company. We are selling only LIS. We develop only LIS. And we distribute our product within 25 countries in the world. We have a business model which is slightly different than what we can see generally. We use distributor partner to distribute our product. So we are in Asia, we're in Europe, and we are in America. And MediSolution is our partner in America.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gilbert Hakim. I'm CEO of Soft Computer. We're one of the largest LIS vendors in the world. We have over 1,200 employees with over 500 installations. We're one of the very few vendors that cover all aspects of laboratory, from anatomic pathology to blood banks to donor modules, microbiology laboratory, and genetics information system as well.
Let me actually seed the panel with the first question. Let me ask each panelist, what is it that worries you the most about the current state of the LIS industry? What do you if you wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, what are you thinking about in terms of your business?
That's okay.
Gilbert doesn't worry about anything. We'll skip Gilbert. I'm sure there must be something. What worries you about the industry?
I can start on that. What worries me, and this happened last year in July, we received a letter from Santé Canada telling us that we have no right anymore to distribute and install our LIS. They have discovered that an LIS is able to modify a result. Having made this big discovery, they decide that we are classified medical device class 2. So in order to distribute in this country, medical device class 2 need to have a license. So they ask us to indicate to all our customers that they were not supposed to use anymore this system and that we have to stop selling and distribute. Problem has been resolved rather quickly because we were ISO 13485, and in order to be class 2, you need to be 13485. We discuss with them. It's absolutely impossible. They say, you modify result, you are class 2, there is no error. So finally, we get our license within next month, and the problem was resolved. So my nightmare is to see the rest of the world, the rest of the countries, deciding that our product is a class 2 device. And regulatory will be on our back and will be a complex cost.
So we have the threat of regulation. And at least in the U.S., the FDA regulates blood bank software. But in fact, there are now discussions about FDA regulating something called IVD-MIA, in vitro diagnostic multivariate indexed assays, and the algorithms used to interpret these. So you need to keep in mind that what regulators do is they regulate. And to a certain extent, they like to expand their scope of control, and they like to bother executive sleep, such as Francois. So does anyone else have any comments about the regulatory environment and whether they think there's going to be any changes in the U.S. in terms of regulation of LIS software?
Well, of course, regulatory and government pronouncements change things dramatically. The market that we started selling into, physician office markets, was created by the government changing the payment strategy by Medicare. I think the government decisions do a lot to create and destroy markets, and we have to be ready to adopt to that. There is something that I worry about, and it sounds pretty cliche, but I worry about dramatic tragedy. We had some labs that were taken out by Katrina. We did what we could to help rebuild those labs. We fortunately didn't have so many that it overpowered us as a company to be able to respond to that. I think it's possible that something more dramatic could happen in the United States, and that would do not just tax us as a supplier, but cause the economy to retract, and I think that would be tough on us all.
Rob, that's a great question. Disaster recovery, is it the vendor's obligation to come up with some sort of disaster recovery scheme for your clients? And if so, what would that look like?
Well, I'm not sure that we can come up with it. It's more inclusive than just software. What we have to plan for is how can we support our clients in their process of doing disaster recovery. And if it's too many clients at the same time, it's difficult to be able to do that appropriately.
Well, to all of you, is that a feature that you offer as part of your system, or do you recommend other vendors that would provide that? Gilbert?
Generally, in a relational database environment, which we use multi-master with Oracle, so we already have two copies of the database online. Oracle provides a third database remote, which is free of charge, which allows you to set up the database in completely another city, which is online updated. And it's probably about 5 to 10 minutes behind. That can be accessed in case of disaster recovery. People through internet can access that database. So that's already built into the application. But from parallel processing point of view, we have supplied this feature since 1995, where two systems can reside in two separate buildings through a fiber optic or even different portion of the city. So you have basically two running systems entirely replicated in database hardware and software.
I think to Rob's point, you know, we provide a lot of help on the software front, but that's just a small part of the picture. And you have to accommodate how you're going to recover the physical plant, the processes, get your people back to work. And if someone at, we're more than willing to help in that, develop that plan with you, but we would typically bring in a partner like IBM or HP who has a tremendous expertise in how to do that for your whole operation.
We have some questions. We're going to launch. Wally, I think you're first. Go ahead.
Thank you. There's a number of forces now that are threatening the existence of kind of standalone or best-of-breed LIS existences, like companies that offer an all-in-one package for electronic medical records and LISs, and other EMR companies that are buying LIS companies, and even some EMR companies that are now making their own LIS. What's your comment or concern about the future of, you know, the ability not only of your organizations to survive? I have a feeling I know what the answer to that will be, but what pressures are you facing and what are you hearing from the marketplace with respect to pressure being put on laboratories to, you know, go away from being able to purchase a system that is best of breed to the lab but maybe not integrated to an EMR?
Anyone?
Yeah, I think we're very involved in that, both as a provider of lab systems and a provider of other systems. Those pendulums swing back and forth. I think probably you've seen it swing in the healthcare industry. It certainly happened in other industries toward consolidated, single-view systems with sort of less than the best capability back toward the best of breed. And I think there'll always be a place for a system that's best of breed that provides a real value proposition to the people that use it. And I think in the lab business, we certainly believe that's still true, that there are great lab systems out there that provide that value that can't be matched by the sort of all-in-one package that you get from some vendor who lab's only part of their focus.
Gilbert?
Generally, that's a very interesting question. And what we found is that, first of all, laboratory information system market is really fragmented. Is not one market. So you're looking at the IDNs on one side, which have enormous amount of different needs and resources required to really keep the different laboratories within that organization happy, where basically HIS vendors have no idea of complexity of these laboratories and software necessary to develop for it. A good example of it from size point of view, majority of the HISs are actually smaller than we are, where we have only maybe a handful of products. Actually, probably except three vendors that I know of, the rest of the HIS vendors on the market are smaller than us. So when you have 600 programmers, the velocity of program generation is so high that they cannot catch you. There's nothing they can do to cover, for example, genetics information system, which takes probably 40 programmers, 6 years to develop. So the key really becomes of, as you go into more complex environment, the integration within the laboratory becomes enormously more valuable than basically having an HIS vendor offer a lab information system. Where, but ironically, majority of interface to the EMR or EHR is done through either web services or HL7 anyways. So it's really not relevant whether they use their own lab system or a foreign lab system. The outcome would be exactly the same.
Francois?
Yes, I will add the fact that we have seen a movement one way or the other way. It's pendulum. I was in EMICL 20 years ago, and there was a presentation from Bruce saying the LIS will disappear, or something like that. And we're still there. And there's something which is coming and may change the situation, is what was presented by Dr. Bellis yesterday, the federated healthcare. And I believe the federated healthcare will help to keep good LIS alive, and by integration of results, in a much easier way. One of the most complex problems we see when we sell, we install an LIS, is the integration with the HIS using HL7. And as you know, HL7 is not HL7. And we have different cases. And we are pushing, and we have customers across the world. We are using more and more a federated healthcare. It's what we are doing is simpler than what was presented yesterday by Dr. Bellis. It's only we use hyperlink communication. We have a web-enabled solution, and they just activate their HIS and ask and give us the ID number of the patient, the authorization right of the user. Then we can just activate our web and present the information. So the LIS will survive, I believe, for a long time.
In my experience, my problem has always been with hospital C-level executives who don't know what they don't know. That is to say, they assume that the labs won't get hurt by buying a package. And then, in a sense, you install the part of the package that's the LIS, and then you lose the functionality. The problem is many lab people don't have a seat around the table. So what you Mike's shaking his head. What you need to do, either by force or by politics, is to make sure that you're able to communicate to them how the lab is getting hurt by the installation of an inadequate package. Wally,
just a brief follow-up comment. I guess this debate is old. There's been systems, and none of us would disagree with the fact that lab systems are very specialized. I guess the factor that has entered the equation now is the fact that, you know, electronic medical record systems are viable. Computerized physician order entry is becoming a requirement. These, to build on what Bruce said, you know, these are now entering into the C-suite more than they've been before, and that's the factor that's making it more difficult for the laboratory to stay as an island, even more so, in my opinion, you know, in the past. And I think it does. Yeah, the lab will always have to have technical functionality that's specialized, but from an administrative question, from a corporate question, you know, what does that mean for buying an individual system? That's not really an additional question, but that's kind of another comment. But thank you for your participation.
Mike?
Just to follow up with what Wally just said, and then I'll ask a second question. We went through the RFP process just recently, and our C-level executives asked us exactly that question. They said, well, we've got contracts with Siemens and with Eclipsis and with Epic, and they have lab systems. Why don't you just buy theirs? And thank God they at least asked us the question rather than dictated the solution. I think the only thing that saved us was we had a very strong team in place that was at the institutional IT level. It wasn't sequestered just within pathology, but I sit on a lot of the oversight committees for a lot of the IT systems and the IT decisions. So when they asked that question, it was almost a knee-jerk reflex that you could say, well, if you do that, then you're buying a multitude of different products, and there's cost associated with that, and you're not going to get a genetic system, and you're not going to get, you know. So the cost of actually what they were suggesting wasn't clear at all to them, and what you had to come back with was a very fast business response, not a functionality response, because it was an MBA asking the question, not a physician, and not somebody who had any IT experience.
So you have to be smarter than they are, which is not that hard.
Yeah, but you have to be at the table also. Otherwise, a lot of places are just having it rammed down their throats, and that's actually a very common trend these days. The question I wanted to ask was actually where this group sees a very pervasive change that's starting to happen now, where we know that healthcare delivery is not sustainable economically from the way it's delivered in the United States. And what we're going to see is a shift, regardless of whether we want it or not, really to push healthcare out of hospitals and out of central systems into offices and really down to the patient level. The infrastructure, the architecture, the IT to do that is really not part of the equation right now. It's not going to happen in 1 year. It's going to happen over a series of 5, 10, 15 years, but it's going to happen. So what are you guys doing to start positioning and thinking about that? And how are your systems going to actually evolve into something that allows the patient to be in control of their data while allowing them to go and see laboratorians at institution A and B and C? And how are they going to get all of that information together?
Great question. In colonoscopies, the CMA and also insurers are paying much more or much better reimbursement for office colonoscopies than in surgery centers. And there may be quality implications. Let me turn to the panel. I'll start with you, Rob. That is this notion of decentralized healthcare, and how do we pick that up with our system?
Well, let me tie a response to that question to also my response from the other one, where you talk about is there a continued role for a laboratory to sell one as an independent system against companies that are selling an integrated system? And it also dovetails into the question you're asking. One of the statements that we make frequently in our company is if you've seen one lab, you've seen one lab. And because all of them are different, it's really difficult to think that one vendor could solve all laboratory problems. The concept that you're buying a system, a laboratory system, from a parent company that's also selling you some other module suggests that the integration between those two systems is the biggest problem you have, and that solving that outweighs solving any other problem in the laboratory. You're asking the question about how do you decentralize information, how do you reach out to your clients. We argue that because we grew up in the clinic market and we've interfaced the EMRs in the clinics all our lives, that the integration between the reference lab or the hospital's reference lab and all of those physician systems is something we know better. And if you're comparing the integration between your laboratory system and the hospital information system, that's one interface. And then there might be 50 to the physician offices in your community. So maybe we're the more integrated system than the one that comes from the vendor that sells your hospital system. I believe that a lot of the business in the LIS and a lot of the change, a lot of the programming that's taking place is aimed at trying to do a better job of integrating our systems with the physician office systems. The average doctor is spending, of course, not all of them have done this yet, but an average EMR system is somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 per physician to get installed and online and relatively paperless. And if they're spending that much money, they insist upon getting their laboratory results in it. And if your laboratory can't get their results inside their EMR, then they'll change laboratories. And so that's a major driving force. And it's enough to take the lab system out of the hospital if you can't do that. So I think that your issue of how do you get it to the physicians, and then even beyond that, how do we get it to individual patients so that they can start managing their information, is the challenge that faces us, and it's going to drive what we do in development over the next 5 years.
Yeah. I would say that's not a future issue. That's a today issue. We are immensely active in that very topic today of integrating labs with EHRs out in the doctor's offices, and more importantly, integrating the whole series of systems that are in the community, not just inside the hospital. And I would say the laboratory has dealt with this issue probably way ahead of most of the rest of the people in the hospital, sharing information back out into the community. If you think about it, you have a tremendous asset. You have all this information. Some estimates 70% of the health record is lab information. You need to be more proactive, in our minds, more proactive in trying to get that information out to doctors to help them do a better job. And our own experience has been that it's through the doctor connection that the patient comes into the equation. That's sort of, you know, their trusted provider, and they like to have the access to the data, but in connection with working with the doctor. And then, you know, the further dynamic is on the acquisition of information for your system. As the technology lets that be more and more decentralized, you've got to be able to extend your toolkit out so that you can manage very decentralized sets of devices that are going to be doing tests in various locations for you, trying to cut out the logistics change that you're having to manage today that's such a problem. So I think this expansion out into the community and into a network, you know, is probably the critical thing I know that we're working on to provide tools to help you solve that going into the future.
Mike, what about the issue of carve-outs, lab carve-outs that go to a large reference laboratories negotiated at a very low price? So right. Obviously with a Rio, these large reference labs would love to be able to have interface to the hospital LIS, right. But in fact, right. That then robs that business from the hospital LIS.
Well, it's interesting that you see people who have a business model where they're shipping, you know, they're the sort of marketing channel, the acquirer of the test, but the actual, you know, testing is being done through an outsourcing agreement with one of the big LabCorp requests. So it's a complicated business model that's evolving out there dealing with these community tasks coming in from the community. And what's key, I think, in our systems is, you know, as we look at how we evolve them, is to make sure that you have access to the information, both to acquire it and distribute it from anywhere in the web, anywhere in the network out there.
Francois?
Well, I think to resolve and to be able to manage those subjects, send requests, send results to physicians, we have two problems to resolve. One, have a common patient ID, and this is a major problem in a lot of countries. We have different level of patient identification. We go from national patient identification, social security number patient identification, regional patient identification, and then local identification. If we cannot resolve that, we are not able to send results identified correctly. Again, we have been able to resolve that and do that in certain countries in the world. The second problem we face is the standardization of the communication. If we have a web-enabled solution, no problem. You activate the web, if you can identify your patient, if you can identify yourself, you find the information. If we have to download or populate the database of the physician office, we face big communication issue because of standardization. This has been resolved in certain countries. France is one of them, and I know we have a communication protocol which is common to every doctor's office, so we have been able to implement that. But this is not such a common thing today in the market. So these two subjects in my mind will have to be resolved before we can go further in this direction.
So, Gilbert, the question of integration of the office EMRs and also even perhaps even lab testing in the home environment.
Right. I think I may have understood the question not properly. I thought you were mentioning the laboratories themselves would basically have a different method of operation and consolidation to reimbursement problems that we're facing now. So, and basically having multi-site type capabilities and reaching the LIS into different areas that didn't exist before. So reality is you're 100% correct. The low end of the market is disappearing. The below 200-bed hospitals that are independent are getting gobbled up. Actually, some of our clients are offering lab management, including IT, to take over just the laboratory of these smaller hospitals. So the movement toward consolidating the IT side of the laboratory and management of the lab is in place because majority of the smaller hospital is a cost center and the financial officer wants to get rid of that problem. So what they do normally, and this is what we have seen, the multi-site or core laboratory multi-site is becoming very dominant. That means that the one set of laboratory information system would stretch into the clinics, into the hospitals, smaller owned or managed hospital. So that particular model is increasing dramatically. Actually, our revenue from that particular model is constituted over 60% of our revenue now, comes from that specific model. And that creates interesting challenges. Is that, for example, two separate core multi-site wants to get married, but they don't want to talk to each other. So it's a very interesting environment where three hospitals wants to have the same system at four other hospitals and share the esoteric test, but they don't want to see each other's patients or be able to know how many of what tests this guy did. So we actually pioneered this type of application in mid-90s where actually competing hospitals created a commercial lab that were charging each other for services that we were providing. So this creates a very interesting problem from security point of view, from access point of view, and from actually architecture of the database point of view. And of course, speed of the application. As these databases grow larger, majority of the older systems had maybe 90 days or 120 days worth of lab result online, where we keep, for example, 10 to 15 years worth of data online. And when you reach into environment where the laboratory produces 4 to 15,000 requisition a day, architecture of these type of applications that are completely different than basically smaller lab information system and trying to replicate that model into the larger environment, which is not possible. So the reality is that component-based architecture, which is a different model of programming and coding, allows us to scale, actually, the application and create the security necessary to basically propagate the same LIS into multiple different environments, including physician office lab, without really worrying about the security side of it, scalability. But this cost reduction pressure, it's there, and consolidation is forcing laboratories to really look into that environment to survive, generally.
Okay, let's go on. Next question, please.
Yes. What about middleware? Are middleware systems that integrate the data from a number of analyzers in order to help the laboratory personnel manage their current operations, are they, will they be a permanent part of the laboratory landscape from now on? Do they represent potential partners for LISs, or are they competitors, or are they a temporary aberration to deal with the limitations of legacy LIS systems?
I'm going to try to answer. I'm going to try to answer briefly. We have written some middleware. We also have an LIS. I have some experience on both sides of that fence. The middleware that we've written is called Aqueduct. It's specifically for hematology department and written in conjunction with Beckman Coulter. The reason for writing it is that the instruments continue to have expanding amounts of information that they can provide that aren't necessarily reportable results but are used in the process of making a decision. And in a hematology department, a large amount of the work is manual off the instrument when you're doing manual differentials. So we wanted to be able to capture all that information and use it to present to people doing manual differentials so they could we could help automate the people process. And the biggest benefit we got was not that we did fewer, although we implemented lots of rules, that we did fewer manual diffs, is that the decisions could be made in half the time. And so the productivity of those people went up. That kind of software wasn't something that we expected an LIS vendor to write because it's so specific to the instrumentation. So there was a value in having put something like that in place. Some middleware is written in order to extend the capabilities of LISs in areas where they haven't gotten around to writing some software, and eventually it goes away. So it is a temporary solution in some cases. In the case that I described, you wouldn't expect an LIS to try to write that kind of software. So if the client has that need, it's something that you would expect the instrument vendors to provide to be an extension to their software. And there are other examples of middleware. But in the accelerated environment that we face, where you've heard us say that we're focusing so much attention on being able to interact with and interface with other systems, it's not unreasonable to think that there are going to be areas we'll neglect in some of our clients' accounts or that we don't do right away. So I think there's a role, and the whole idea of middleware is that it's possible for us to start cobbling together different systems and have them actually work together and not be so arduous integrated solution can work. So I think it's being accepted. It certainly is going to continue to contribute.
So, Mike, the MISIS attitude toward middleware?
I think Rob defined it very well. There are functions that showed up in middleware that need to migrate into the LISs because that's just a more efficient place for the laboratory to do that process, all integrated together. There are other things that may be unique to a specific device that truthfully, it's not a good investment for us. We provide more value to you if we invest our money somewhere else, and those things will survive. And I think the market will play that out over time. You know, I know that's how we're approaching the problem.
So I know, Francois, you're bullish on middleware because you have now an American unit doing middleware. Can you comment on that?
Yes, I think. Okay, for the first thing for me, middleware is new, just a name for something that exists since probably more than 20 years. If my memory is right, it was called a result processor on the SMAC in 1980. For those who remain SMAC, So it's we change for Razor processor, data manager, middleware. So it will continue to be there. We probably, the IVD vendor need those kind of instruments to protect their business in one sense, to offer more solution to the customer. But those functionality can be managed as well by the LIS. Some LIS have the capability to do auto verification and to do all what has been described yesterday into the panel, into the workshop. So middleware is more, for me, a business approach to offer a solution for a laboratory who may have legacy solution and are a solution for the IVD vendor to capture and to keep some customer satisfied with a global solution. So it will stay. It will stay. There is no doubt. And we will survive with that.
Gilbert?
Yes, generally, as was mentioned, this product is used for legacy LIS vendors in general. The new LIS that we have been installing last 5 years, actually, normally we turn off features of the middleware if it comes with the instrument set to make sure it's completely transparent. So we receive all the components, whether it's an image or an error or indices that are not reported from the instrument directly into the LIS. And the reason for that is we have much broader capability based on diagnosis and other elements to release the result. And of course, that particular middleware, if it filters this information, it would hamper the ability to really properly auto-verify results. One of the major aspects about it's the patient history. For example, we can detect toxic pregnancy, which occurred maybe 9 months ago, the prior result, where that information is not in the middleware. So they cannot make that kind of decision in general. One of the major aspects also in the middleware is normally it's designed to connect few instruments and make it facilitate distribution of work between those instruments and then release it to an LIS to basically offload that particular task. Ironically, during the process of basically distributing work, you do not want to do that with just two or three instruments. In our environment, we can distribute work based on time of the day, day of the week. So we can combine instruments based on labor availability, time of the day, day of the week. So we have actually a virtual middleware built into the application that during the evening shift or night shift, you only have one tech running and all instruments are pumped through push technology one screen. So the tech actually sees urine, chemistry, hematology on the same screen, like came from same instrument, where 2 hours later, the whole picture changes. And now you have two or three stations that operate like this. So it's a lot more flexible to do virtual middleware generally than a physical middleware sitting in the process. One of the major aspects in the IDN environment, as the labor becomes more and more expensive, with this model, you can actually release results remotely without being near the instrument. Where in the middleware environment, you basically are locally strapped. So in our environment, we can release the result from another city because all components of result of the instrument is in the server and nowhere else.
I was going to say...
Oh, go ahead, Rob.
One other quick example of middleware that shows you where I think it can make sense, and it will migrate. The people that are delivering it now may not be the people that are going to be delivering it in the future, but it'll still be middleware. With handheld devices, where people are walking around a healthcare facility doing testing, it's not a very good input device. You take the basic minimum amount of information, and then you would like to put that back into your hospital system. But it isn't consumable information. When that information is sent directly into either a LIS or some medical record system, we don't know what to do with it. Should we deliver it to a doctor? Which doctor do we deliver it to? Do we bill it? Was it part of an order that already exists? So in order to be able to make it consumable information, you use middleware. You dump that information to a workstation, and somebody sits down to add the additional information so it can be used. And that software is often delivered by the people who make the handheld devices, because they're the ones that have an interest in being able to get those devices integrated in. Often they include other things in that software, like management and setup of those devices. But here's the problem. The hospital buys that. They train every nurse on every floor. And then next year they buy another device that's going to be used in conjunction to complement that, and every nurse on every floor has to learn how to use a different set of middleware software. And after six devices, they give up, and they won't use the middleware software. So this subsidized middleware software that's being delivered by the device manufacturer, it makes sense for them to subsidize it, is going to be replaced by software that has to talk to all the different devices. And at that point, you're willing to actually pay for the software because you're solving a problem that one vendor doesn't expect to give you for free. So we're going to see the middleware is going to migrate from the instrument vendors to maybe the LIS as a vendor who might supply middleware just to do this task. But it's still going, there's still a need for that intermediary device. Interesting market.
One more question, sir.
Okay, I probably, like most of you, I work for a laboratory as a reference lab for physicians. I don't deal with hospitals. However, one of the issues that we have seen over the years, and it's good to have it here because one of the vendors here is one of the ones we're working with, for 18 months now we've been trying to interface with their EMR product. Do you see any truly regulated or centralized or formatted format to talk to the EMRs or to your other systems so that time isn't being wasted? We have clients who are going, well, you can't do it. Yes, we can, but your vendor isn't working with us.
So,
do you see that as an issue from your sides also?
You're looking for a standard way for an LIS to talk
to? Well, HL7 is a standard, but it's not a standard. Every HL7 system we have talks differently. I'm asking, as the vendors up there who communicate with each other, do you all have standards to talk to each other, or are you like us? We have to talk to each one of you, and for 18 months we've been working on talking to one EMR to get it to talk.
An element of answer, there is another approach, another standard, which is called IHE. IHE is Integrated Healthcare Enterprise. It's a strong movement, work very well with RSNA, has been implemented a long time ago, and has demonstrated its efficiency. We see IHE development in Japan market, European market, and U.S. market. There seems to be no push, what I've seen today, from the American market on the laboratory domain. And I believe that could be a way to resolve part of the problem, because IHE is telling you how you use HL7 to make HL7 equivalent to HL7 in a certain application. And it has been demonstrated. There was a big connect atom in IMSS a week ago with good demonstration, but you need to push this movement in this market to make it a reality.
So, Rob, I know you have strong feelings about this. Is IHE the answer for LIS, EMR, more standardized integration?
Well, certainly the ability to integrate is an issue for me, and we talk about it a lot. It would be nice if integration could happen more easily than it happens today. One of the challenges with HL7 is that although it's a format, and we agree that if we're going to send some information, here's the field where you can find it, it's a little bit like saying we're both going to speak English. But after that, you can invent what you'd like to do with this English when it passes back and forth. There's more than one place, for example, to send diagnosis codes, well-defined in the standards of HL7. What we haven't done a good job of defining is what constitutes a complete message. If you're going to send a laboratory requisition to me from your EMR, what does it mean to be a complete lab order rather than just a partial lab order that I then need to have to program in order to cope with the deficiencies of the order that came in? And I'm not sure that it's difficult to go to the EMR and say, well, we try. We say, here are certain pieces of information that a physician needs to give us in order to complete a lab result, but that's not a complete order. Here's information that has to be gathered from the patient, information that has to be provided to the phlebotomist, and let's define those as roles and then decide whose software is going to support each of those roles. If you as an EMR are going to support the doctor, then you've got to send us physician, doctor, diagnosis code, tests that you want to order, and timing of the test. And don't do any more than that. If you want us to do the phlebotomy role involves communicating with the phlebotomist to tell them what tubes to draw, what questions to ask. If a lipid profile has been ordered, we need to know fasting time. Have you been taking your Coumadin? What was your dosage? We need to print manifests to send to the laboratory, labels for the tubes, an ABN in Spanish if that's necessary. And the EMRs, as a result, tend to not do all of those things because it isn't really part of the domain of supporting the physician. It's a support staff position. We haven't done a great job of working out the relationships, and it's hard for a lab company to dictate to the EMRs how they behave, and it's difficult for the EMRs to dictate to us how we have to support them. And it's a difficult problem, and I hear frustration in the question. We all have frustration trying to deal with the answer.
That problem is identified as one of the top three business problems from our customer base. And we hear year after year the time and the cost to put interfaces in, particularly to EMRs. I wish we could say we were more optimistic that we were on our way to a standard, but it looks like business as usual in the standards committees and competing standards from different sides of the argument. IHE has made significant progress the last 2 years. It's still a long way from being something you could say, yeah, we can drop that in everywhere in an afternoon.
Mike, is it the case that the EMRs don't view the LIS vendors as peers and they don't have peer-to-peer? They can dictate the terms?
They have very little incentive in their business because, as you mentioned to the doctor, it's a staff function that the lab test is going to get ordered. They're okay that it's a piece of paper, truthfully, that flows up to the lab. So there's no impetus on their side, right, to come to some conclusion from the EMR vendor side, from their business models. And even within the laboratory and diagnostic side, I think there's a lot of competing interest in what is the standard going to be.
So a federated model at least would create more of a peer-to-peer environment.
Right. Yes. Right. You give some incentive to make it easier for everybody to hook up.
Gilbert, do you have any last thoughts about this topic? Yes,
generally, this model was devised by HL7 version 3, which is normalized database across all manufacturers. So already the standard has been devised, and unfortunately, it's too complex and too abstract to be implemented. And the content, that was the transport. The content, they chose Loink and SNOMED CT to provide the actual definition of the procedures across multiple modules. Now, this is the ideal situation, and ironically, we have only one client that is really using it in a limited fashion. It's called Web Services generally, which allows multiple disparate systems without knowing what the content is to really grab the information and display or do whatever they like with it. So this HL7 version 3 is the ultimate goal. The current initiative actually, which is quite interesting, started in radiology with DICOM standard, where they propose LOINC, and what they're doing is that they're using HL7 with LOINC and SNOMED CT with DICOM for imaging and communication within DICOM. And that initiative has been successful in terms of making this disparate system communicate. So that initiative is still within versions 2.3 and 2.4 of HL7.
With that, we'll conclude this panel discussion. I'd like to give them a great hand for their contribution.